Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Malazzo.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Our charity of the month for August is Cambridge Past, Present and Future. Our CEO James Littlewood is back with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about the campaigning side of what you do this morning. Welcome back to Cambridge Breakfast, by the way.
Welcome and good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Camborne, the Camborne Coton Cambridge busway, which has been in the news only in the past few days. It's been delayed, as I gather. There's going to be a change of route. Are you happy with that route change? Or, 'cause I know you were campaigning early on about the possible dangers to wildlife along the way.
Well, actually, our concern for the Cambridge busway is more about the landscape of the Cambridge area.
Right.
When we were founded in nearly 90 years ago, one of the areas that we first turned our attention to was the area west of Cambridge and around Coton Village, which was under threat of development at the time. Mm. And our founders purchased quite a bit of land in that area around Coton, and particularly on Maddingley Hill, because they felt that was one of the most important landscapes around Cambridge. It was lovely views of the city. So they bought the land, hoping that that would prevent development on it forever. However, they weren't aware of more modern compulsory purchase powers that the local government and central government has.
Would they have been around at that point? I guess they probably wouldn't have
I don't think they would have been. And so the proposed route of the busway would go straight through the land that was purchased by our founders in order to prevent it being developed and to protect it in perpetuity. So that's our concern. And that land also has covenants on it from the National Trust. So this busway will go through land which was, and we think is some of the most important landscape.
So regardless of the change of route, that makes no difference to your side of things.
It doesn't particularly make a great deal of difference. I mean, we have been in discussions with the Greater Cambridge Transport people to ask them to look at the route to try and make it as least harmful as possible, but we don't support it. We prefer it didn't go ahead at all. But if it is going to have to go ahead against our wishes, then we are trying to influence the sort of exact alignment, and I think that's what they're looking at here, rather than a complete reassessment of the route itself, is my understanding.
That sort of thing must be so challenging for you, because I guess also your members wouldn't be too happy with a whole load of cars and all the exhaust fumes going into Cambridge each morning either. So in theory, the idea of a busway is very nice, but it kind of depends where you put the thing.
Exactly. So we've been campaigning really for two things. One is we would prefer to see a bus route or inbound bus route on the Maddingley Hill. We know that 30% of the traffic is basically heading to the M11. So we've also been campaigning for the Girton interchange to be made four ways, because that would take a lot of traffic off that road. Mm. And with an inbound busway, the buses would be able to pass straight downhill, avoid all the traffic and come into Cambridge. So if the buses were to do that, they wouldn't get there a lot slower than off this new bus route, which is just going to deposit people at the back of Grange Road. So our view, for £200 million, you know, getting into Cambridge 2 minutes early, quicker, are people really going to give up their cars for that? I don't think so. So we're concerned that what we're going to end up here with is a very expensive scheme, which is quite damaging on the landscape and doesn't really deliver a great deal of benefit.
The Green Belt in general, is it surviving around Cambridge? You know, the rules are obviously in place to keep it green, but as you say, lots of people nibbling at the edges, basically.
The short answer is no, and that's not just in Cambridge, that's across the UK. And this is really the government sort of having its cake and eat it. On one hand, it says there should be no development on the Green Belt. The Green Belt is sacrosanct. But on the same time, it also then puts local authorities under great pressure to build houses, and says that local authorities can release land from the Green Belt under exceptional circumstances.
So they can blame the local authority then when it's destroyed.
Yes.
Okay, clever.
Yes, and so what we've seen over a number of years is areas of the Green Belt being around Cambridge being released for development. So the Eddington development in Northwest Cambridge was once Green Belt. The Trumpington development, sort of Great Knighton development, was also Greenbelt as well. And some smaller releases which have not yet been built, but which will be built. So those of you sort of know South Cambridge as you're coming out of Cambridge, the sort of area of land between the sort of edge of Cambridge and the Babraham Parkham Ride on the left-hand side, if you're going out of Cambridge, those fields there are also due to be built upon, which is Greenbelt as well. So generally we try and campaign against those types of Greenbelt release.
And is Cambridgeshire, is it in a better or a worse position, would you say, than the rest of the country? We all know the pressures, and every time we almost daily, it feels like we're reporting on some new housing development which is or isn't being planned.
I think in Cambridge, actually, in the last local plan, a lot of the new development was sort of leapfrogged beyond the green belt. So new developments like Water Beach and North Stowe and Camborne are all outside the green belt. So they're the other side of the green belt. So although some land was released from the green belt itself, a lot of the new development was skipped over it. And for that reason, Cambridge isn't faring, the green belt of Cambridge anyway, isn't faring necessarily any worse than other parts of the UK where, you know, they're also seeing their green belt go.
And your campaigning role, what kind of proportion, you know, when you're sitting in your Cambridge past, present and future office, so how much of your time does that take up? Or is it some of the other things you talked about last time, such as the maintenance of buildings and places like the Gogs and Wandlebury?
As a whole, as an organisation, in terms of what our staff do, mostly it's looking after the buildings and properties, because that's, you know, takes a lot of time and effort. But a lot of my time and one of my colleagues' time is spent on the campaigning side of things. We act as a planning and heritage watchdog. So when we also have a fantastic team of volunteers as well. So we have two groups. We have a planning group and a heritage group. And they look at planning applications that come forward. They assess them, decide how we should respond and help us to draft our response to the local authorities on those.
And when people join you, do they sort of look at one side or the other, or are they looking at the at the whole total package?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that we really know. I think some are across both, but some definitely join us because they're interested in Wandlebury, and some are definitely interested in the civic work that we do.
Talking about civic work, actually, we were just saying that you also look after the blue plaque scheme around Cambridge. Is that right?
That's right. We took that on around 18 months ago. A group of volunteers
have
been
working on that. Because you were like, not busy enough as it was.
Well, exactly. But we were involved in the start and they were looking for a new home for it. And, you know, it's a great scheme. And yeah, we just thought it had a lot of synergy with what we do.
So how many are there in the city?
There's about 30 blue plaques, I think maybe 31 now, dotted around the city. And we've just expanded the scheme to South Cambridgeshire as well.
Okay.
So we put the first plaque up, which was at Girton College, which is the Hurst in South Cambridgeshire.
So how does the blue plaque scheme work?
So people can nominate either a person or an event for a blue plaque. There's more details on our website, on the blue plaque page on our website, but generally you've got to have been dead for 10 years. So the person is nominated. There's a committee of volunteers who will consider that nomination, and if they think the person warrants a blue plaque, then we need to find a building to put it on, and we need to raise the funds to commission the plaque and also to have an unveiling event as well to celebrate that person.
When was the last one? What was the most recent one?
The most recent one that we did was for the Girton College, so it was the founders of Girton College, and they were celebrating their 150th anniversary, so that's gone up on the entrance to Girton College. That was at the end of June, and the one we're working on at the minute is for Dame Leah Manning, which we will be unveiling at the end of September. And she was an educationalist and a reformer and a campaigner for children's rights. And she worked at what was called a ragged school, so in a poor school, which is now part of Anglia Ruskin University.
So that's going to go, is it on the Ruskin? Is that where it's going to go?
Yeah, that's where it's going to go, yeah.
Right. Is it right to say that majority of them in Cambridge are sort of quite linked with the university, University of Cambridge, rather than...
To some extent. I mean, the criteria for you getting a blue plaque requires you to have done something remarkable.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we're not short of remarkable people in Cambridge, primarily because of the work that they do for the university. But people have to have done more than just gone to the college.
Yeah.
So if they're a famous person and they were an undergrad at Cambridge, then they wouldn't qualify for a blue plaque.
They have to have done something for Cambridge.
Yeah, if they have done something either in Cambridge or for Cambridge, and they need to have lived or worked here and had an influence.
Okay. That's fascinating, actually.
The whole
interview on its own, really. I found that little idea is ticking in the back of my back of my head on that. But James, thank you very much for coming in. If people have kind of are interested, if they I don't know, they might want to nominate somebody for a blue plaque, or perhaps join you on some of your campaigning. What's the best place for them to get in touch?
The best place for them to get in touch is via our website. If you look up Cambridge Past, Present and Future on one of the search engines, or cambridgeppf.org.
Okay, thank you very much. That's James Littlewood. He is the CEO of Cambridge Past, Present and Future. 18 after 8. Cambridge 105 Radio.